This is WMUK's West to Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Jeff Oddy, who writes the Family Man column for the magazine FYI Southwest Michigan, tells us about the condescending attitudes he sometimes feels from moms. The stay-at-home dad says being matronized shares its origins with the beliefs that lead to sexism and gender bias against women. But first, United for Change is an effort to connect students to people who are in real careers and help young people envision themselves in a future career. Chris Sargent is Chief Operating Officer for the United Way of the Battle Creek and Kalamazoo region. Chris Sargent, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Gordon, for having us.
Give us the basics. How does this program work?
Yeah, so about 3 years ago, a group of businesses, along with United Way and Southwest Michigan First, were talking about, so we've got time that we want to engage our employees and our companies in volunteer efforts in the community, but we really want to do it in ways that have meaningful impact. And so how could we do something together? How could we build on that? And it really took the leadership of Eaton and Stryker and about two dozen companies almost 3 years ago that came together and said, we think that we can have a measurable difference in education. If we get our companies and our employees engaged, we think that we can have the impact that we want to see for education and kids in our region, in the Kalamazoo and Battle Creek region. And so we're going to invest some time and we're going to see what kind of results that we can have. And the great thing is we're having significant results really around four different strategies.
Who's participating? You mentioned Eaton and Stryker. Are there other companies involved?
Yeah, Borges, Bronson, Western, Kellogg Company, Denso, Duncan Aviation, a lot of the large regional manufacturing organizations. We also have small to mid-sized businesses engaged. And the great thing about this is you don't have to have 50 employees. You can have five. You don't have to be even a part of a company. You can just be an individual who says, I want to make a difference in education as well, and I want to be a part of this.
What school districts are taking part?
We have school districts across the region in both Kalamazoo and Calhoun County. So we have today, for example, in one of our events, we've got Parchment and Climax Scotts, Galesburg Augusta, Comstock Public Schools. We have Battle Creek Public Schools in the Battle Creek area, along with Lakeview and Harper Creek. So we really have a number of different school districts engaged in each of the strategies.
You mentioned that there's some specific areas that you're focusing on, early grade reading,
yep.
Mentorships, career fairs, externships.
Correct.
So why these four areas?
Well, it's a continuum for us. So here's what we know. We know that for kids to get a good start in education, being able to read proficiently by the end of third grade is critical. So we know that kids up and through third grade are reading, learning to read up to third grade, and then from there, reading to learn. So fourth grade math doesn't make sense if they're not proficient in reading by the end of third grade. So we start there, and we have hundreds of volunteers that are going in as reading buddies, really participating and working with students and making sure that they're not only proficient, but in many cases, they're advancing by a grade level or two through that program. And then in sixth grade, we work with key partners like Big Brothers Big Sisters to really focus on mentoring. You know, one of the things that really surprised us in looking and working with schools about what we could do and what impact we could have is they said, you know, kids are starting to drop out in sixth grade. And that wasn't something that we really knew much about or even believed could be true. And so we said, well, Big Brothers Big Sisters is doing a lot of great work with mentoring. They actually bring kids on site in a program called Bigs in Business. And so, you know, 10, 15 kids come on site a couple of times a month and really for an hour get that positive mentoring and then go back and do well in school and their academics. The eighth grade career fair, which actually we're on Western's campus today, with 450 kids in the eighth grade, learning about career and career exploration. So really seeing the connection between their education and ultimately what type of careers they can start thinking about and what they need to do, not only with a high school diploma, but a college education or technical training post high school. And then in the ninth grade, the continuum really goes into saying, okay, so you've had the experience in eighth grade where you got exposure to different businesses and careers. Now you have the opportunity to go on site for a day and really get a full experience in a local business that you have interest in.
And is that the difference between an externship and an internship?
Correct. Yeah, the internships then are the opportunities where the businesses say, we're interested in having some students come and actually having a full internship experience with us. So a number of our manufacturing organizations are looking for those, where they'll work with high school students, create jobs, and create opportunities with them. And so those are the internship type of experiences that continue on past ninth grade.
Now, you mentioned the concern about students dropping out of high school. But a lot of the research out there now is that a high school diploma just isn't going to get you very far.
Right.
You don't necessarily need a four-year degree to make a good living. So is there also the idea that, yes, you need to graduate high school, and then beyond that, you need to be ready to go on and do something else?
Absolutely. That's why we use the language of college and career. So what we know is that some folks will come out in skilled trades, want to be a part of the skilled trades, and we want them to understand that a high school diploma is a good first step, but they also have technical and career training opportunities that aren't college, but are here local as well, that can get them ready for skilled trades and specialized manufacturing and things like welding that we hear a lot about, where you still need that certificate, you still need some specialized training, but you don't have to go on and get a four-year degree to be able to do that.
So you mentioned that this was a pilot program, which is now ramping up into something bigger.
Yeah.
During that pilot phase, what did you find out about what works and maybe what doesn't work?
Right. Well, for example, in the early grade reading space, in some school districts now, we've been there for 4 years. In one school in particular, we started with a kindergarten class. What we found was, is that particular kindergarten class in that elementary school, students were exiting kindergarten and only 1% of them were proficient in the reading level that they should be at. 3 years later, having done this program, it's now up to almost 80%. And in every year that we've been doing this, we've seen double-digit increases in reading proficiency, and we're now in some schools K through third grade, each of the grades. What we've learned is you can't just work with the students. You also got to support the teachers with professional development and best practice coaching, and you've also got to get the parents engaged. And so we've done things like parent engagement nights where parents understand how important it is to read for 30 minutes with their child every night. They understand that there's books available that they can take home because a lot of our families, quite honestly, don't have the resources to be able to provide books in the home. So we're providing those types of things. For us, it's about eliminating barriers. We know that parents and families have high aspirations for their kids' success in education, but in many cases, they don't have all the resources or the tools necessary to be able to achieve that. So what we've learned is we can't just focus on one aspect. It's a multifaceted approach.
When you mentioned the idea of professional development, does that require some sort of a public-private partnership to pay for training and those sort of things?
Yeah, absolutely. What we found is a lot of our school districts really across the region are struggling with budgets. We hear it all the time. Less per pupil funding and those types of things. And so it's going to take unique public-private partnerships to be able to fill those gaps that are existing. And we can't look at it as, you know, K-12 education has to do all of this. We have to look at it as the ways in which communities can get engaged. And that's exactly what we're doing with United for Change.
Do you have to have some patience here and perhaps be nimble, I guess, is what I'm thinking, as you go along? Because this is it sounds like a pretty long-term project.
Yep.
We're talking about dealing with kids in kindergarten and trying to see them become successful by the time they are ready to go to college or take part in technical training. So I guess you have to keep evaluating and see what's working as you move forward.
Yeah, you absolutely do, because the environment changes. I mean, different testing comes down the pipe, different priorities. We learn more about best practice and those types of things. We really look at this as a generational approach. This isn't what we're going to do for the next 2 years or 5 years or 10 years. This is what we're going to do. We're going to change the culture in the community and across the region for the next 20 plus years. And we're going to keep redoing it. We're going to keep repeating it. We're going to keep learning about best practice. We also know that for the schools that we're working with, the key is a willingness to work with the community. And so all the schools and all the districts that we're working with have said, we want to engage, we want to work with you. And then the fundamental thing for the businesses that are part of this and the community organizations that are, is we're going to measure success. And where we're not having success, we're going to tweak, we're going to evaluate, we're going to change course, we're going to course correct where we need to, because ultimately it's about seeing the measurable impact. If kids aren't achieving more academically, if they're not doing better socially and emotionally, if they're not looking for ways to be the next generation of pipeline for careers and employers in the community, then we've got to do different things. And so every time that we evaluate this on an annual basis in each of the four strategies, that's a key principle for us.
Part of the United Way report on this notes that the graduation rates at many of the area schools falls below the national average. Was that the key number that jumped out at people and said, this is a problem that we have to address?
Yeah, ultimately, it's about increasing high school graduation. On-time graduation, as a matter of fact, so that's really important as well. But we have benchmarks along the way. So we have benchmarks like, what is the third grade reading proficiency and what kind of impact are we having on that? We have benchmarks about how many volunteers are we getting engaged in meaningful mentoring relationships with the students, because we know that that's critical. Ultimately, it's about high school graduation rate. And then beyond that, we're starting to measure and we'll be measuring things around what kind of college attainment are we having? What kind of career and technical training certificates and experiences are we building in the community?
You mentioned some of the involvement by corporate partners. Were they coming to you and perhaps coming to the schools and saying, we need more skilled workers, we need more workers who are able to do the jobs that we have open?
Yeah, the great thing about our corporate partners is they're saying that, and they're also saying, and how can we help? We realize that we can't just ask for a different skill set of workers or increased skill set of our workers, but we also know that we've got to be a part of that solution and engaging with it. And the schools, quite honestly, are saying, so we can provide kind of core curriculum and those types of things, but we need to understand, so what is the current reality of business? What are you needing that maybe the kind of standard K-12 curriculum may not be specialized in? And then how do we partner to create those experiences as well so that the kids come out and they have those types of base skills, both soft skills, but also the hard skills that make them employable?
At the end of the day, is also the goal then a better economic climate in Southwest Michigan, because there should be more skilled workers, more workers ready to go to work?
Absolutely. This is a holistic approach. So it is about helping kids. It is about setting them up for future success with academic achievement. It's also about helping our local businesses do well and have the next generation of skilled workforce. And then that cycle perpetuates itself into a greater community with a vibrancy and an economic stability that we all appreciate.
There's a new report out by various United Way agencies in Michigan about the high levels of poverty in the state, people who are working poor but still are having some real trouble affording the necessities of life. Does what you're doing here sort of dovetail with that report about the problems that people face economically in the state?
Yeah. What we know is, you know, our poverty rates, most people are familiar with that. They're the upper teens across Kalamazoo and Calhoun County and across the region. But this new report called ALICE, or Asset Limited Income Constrained Employed, really looks at working families and helps better understand what's going on in many of our families who are working one, two, three jobs and struggling to make ends meet. And what we know is across the region, that percentage is actually higher than the number of families in poverty. These are the folks that sit just above poverty. It's 25% to 28%. And so when you combine the two, over 40% of our families in this region are struggling either in poverty or just above poverty to make ends meet. And the only way that we can help them get out of that is with a good paying job.
So what are some things we might look for in the next few months or even the next year or so pertaining to United for Change? It shows us where this is headed.
Well, you're going to continue to see the reports in terms of the impact that we're having. So we put it together an annual report that we're putting out there and on our website so people can see the kind of impact that we're having. The other thing that you're going to see a lot of is recruitment, efforts to recruit individuals, companies, employees. We need more of all of it. We need hundreds and thousands. And so we've really got a system where people can say, I want to spend a couple of hours a year I want to spend a couple of hours a month, or I want to spend 30 minutes a week because I've got that ability and I'm passionate about this work. Because, if, for example, this week for or last week for me, I have a third grade student in a local elementary, Allison, who I read with every week, a colleague and I do. You know, we get to see firsthand the kind of success that she's having. And she's actually two grades ahead in reading proficiency now. And we've worked with her over the last 3 years every year. I've got a sixth grade student that I'm mentoring in the Bigs in Business program with Big Brothers Big Sisters. And last week was our last week together. And he said, so when do I get to see you again? And I said, you're going to do really well academically at the end of the school year. You're going to have a great summer and I'll see you in the fall. And he goes, I'm looking forward to it because I've really enjoyed the chance to get a connection with you. Those are the types of differences that inspire all of us. That says to us, we're making a difference in addition to the outcomes that we're having that, you know, that we can measure. We also know that we're having an impact on each and every child in the community. And so we know that connecting people to those experiences and giving people the opportunity to engage is what we're going to be focused on over the next couple of months.
Chris Sargent, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Chris Sargent is Chief Operating Officer for the United Way of the Battle Creek and Kalamazoo region. Links with more information about the United for Change program can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. In his most recent Family Man column for the magazine FYI, Southwest Michigan, Jeff Oddie says sometimes he feels slighted as a stay-at-home dad. The writer says compared to systemic gender inequality that women face, maybe he shouldn't complain. But Oddie says the condescension he feels from some moms is derived from the same tired gender stereotypes. Jeff Oddie, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Before we get into this specific column, let's back up and explain how you ended up writing the Family Man column for FYI.
Yeah, sure. So the publisher of FYI is Marie Lee, who also publishes Encore magazine around town, which has been around for, you know, like 100 years or something. So FYI is more recent. We just started doing FYI in September. I should also say, I guess, that my wife, Tiffany Fitzgerald, is the editor, or was the editor until like last week of FYI. So I kind of had like an in. I had an in for FYI. So I don't remember whether it was Marie or my wife who asked me if I wanted to write that, or if I volunteered to write Family Man. But I've been a columnist before for other magazines, and it sounded like something I wanted to do. I have been, you know, a stay-at-home dad more or less for like three, almost 4 years.
Which is how old your son is?
Yeah, my younger son is going to be four in September. So I've been kind of more or less a stay-at-home dad since he's been born, or at least like the primary caretaking parent. So yeah, it just sounded like something that would be fun to write.
Is it still rare in your experience when you're around town to find another father who is a stay-at-home dad?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't see a lot of them. It's not like I'm looking, you know, when I'm like going around town or whatever. You know, like, how if you buy a new car, then all of a sudden you see that model of car everywhere. Like, I don't necessarily do that with dads, but I feel like I don't see a lot of them. Like when I'm at playgrounds and stuff, or just doing the things that you do when you have a small child to like keep them entertained, I don't see a lot of like lone dads roaming around out there.
So did you come up with the term mom descended?
I did. Yeah, I came up with that one.
Explain what it means for the audience.
So the column that we're talking about is kind of about being, I guess, like patted on the head for like, oh, aren't you cute being a dad? I tell a couple of little anecdotes in the column about, you know, experiences I've had with women, you know, interacting with women as, you know, a father, like out and about with my young kid. And so the first one I talk about is the clerk at a gas station was like, "Oh, is mom at work today?" And I was like, yeah, she is. But then I don't, like, it felt kind of icky, you know, like I'd been patronized, or the other term I coined is matronized, which I am also pretty proud of. So yeah, basically a portmanteau of condescending and mom descent and mom. Yes. Okay.
Now, I will stipulate here, I have been in some of these situations myself. As now I'm a working father. Obviously, I have a job, but sometimes I'm more free in the afternoon than my wife, who also works, so I'm somewhere with my kids. I've experienced some of these things, maybe not to the extent you describe them in the column, but I'm wondering, do you get the other side of this, which I've gotten sometimes, and I've heard other mothers and fathers talk about this, sort of the extra credit for being the dad who shows up at something, and you're sort of almost, you know, a godlike figure because you took time out of your day to do the same thing that the moms are doing, many of whom are working as well, but you're the dad and you showed up. Does that come into play as well?
Yeah, right. Like the old, like, dad doesn't come to your baseball games kind of thing. Yeah. So if you're a dad who comes to the baseball game, then you get patted on the back. You know, I haven't been doing it long enough because my younger son is just coming up on 4 now. So he hasn't really had like baseball games and school plays and stuff for me to go to yet. Drop him off at daycare. So I don't know, but it's funny that you say, you know, I have a job, and I also say, well, I'm in school, you know, I do some work, right? As if we're uncomfortable with just being like, I work too, you know, like I contribute things, I have an income, you know, like it's still important to us as men maybe to say, but I'm not just a dad, or just a stay-at-home dad, or just a housewife, or whatever.
Well, let me ask you, though, and I don't mean to touch a nerve here, but I guess I wonder if maybe some of the comments you hear from women, other dads may hear them, and maybe they don't resonate in the same way, because it's like, yeah, I'm a dad, but tomorrow I'm going to go to work. And so I'm wondering, you know, do you ever wonder yourself if maybe you're a little more attuned to some of the things people say because you are the primary caregiver to this to your son?
Yeah, or maybe the more important aspect of it is not the primary income provider, which is sort of the role that is expected of you, maybe even today as you know, a man in a family or a husband or a father, is to bring home the bacon, or which is what my wife does. My wife is the bacon bringer. Like, I feel pretty comfortable in the arrangement that I have with my wife. I feel like it's more important to her to be an income provider than it is to me. And I, you know, I really enjoy like hanging out with my kids, and like this sort of day-to-day grind of like keeping them entertained. You know what I mean? Like, I think I enjoy that more than she does, which is certainly not to disparage her in any way. But maybe there is, you know, maybe there is some kind of, you know, discomfort in not occupying the traditional role, or, you know, that kind of thing that you wonder, like, oh, what do people think of me? You know what I mean? Like, I feel comfortable with it, but I don't know. I kind of wonder, I guess, like, what do other people think of me?
Now, you do note in your column that there are lots of things that women can rightly point to as sort of systemic gender bias in our society that, as you say, are probably worse than what you've encountered with perhaps some moms being rude to you on the playground or somewhere else. So why did you decide this was still worth writing about?
You know, one, because I just have to think up things to write about.
You know,
so like, this is a thing that happened to me that I've talked about, you know, with my wife, and it seemed like something funny to write about. But I guess also because, I guess whatever condescension like I experience from moms, which like I should say has really been like pretty limited. It's not like this is something I encounter on a daily basis. Like every time I go to the gas station with my son or something, I get, you know, condescended. So it's been a thing that's happened to me a few times and has been annoying. But I think that the root of it is, you know, is the same sort of attitudes that play into gender bias and sexism. You know, women have to tolerate daily experiences that I just don't have to tolerate. It came up just the other day with my wife that, you know, I walked to like across downtown to a restaurant or something at night and just didn't even think about it and did that alone. And it didn't even occur to me not to do that. And that's a thing that my wife would just never do. You know, she would never walk across downtown in the dark by herself. And that's a, you know, that's an experience that I just like, it doesn't even occur to me to think about, which, and it's something that she deals with every day. So I certainly, you know, I don't want to like come off here like one of these guys where I'm like, oh, reverse sexism, because I don't think it works that way. I guess like what I'm saying is that, it, you know, it comes from the same sort of tired gender attitudes that, I don't know, you know, maybe someday we can get over it.
But you like being the guy who's with the kids more often than your wife.
I do. Yeah, I really enjoy it. There's a part of me that is childish, that I just like doing kid stuff. You know, I like playing on playgrounds and flying kites. I'm like the type of guy who like, I'm just not that embarrassed to like be playing on a playground as a grown man, which my wife is. My wife would never play on a playground, at least not in front of other people. Maybe she would do that by herself.
So I'm not sure when people will hear this, but we are speaking between Mother's Day and Father's Day. And is that perhaps appropriate? Because perhaps what you're getting at in this particular column is that we as a society are still in some ways stuck in these traditional ideas of gender and the pace that we're moving towards, perhaps accepting that a dad can cook dinner and mom can coach baseball. The pace is still pretty slow in getting there.
Yeah, I think that's true. I definitely, you know, things have changed since I was a kid, I think. Those roles are less cemented than they used to be. But, you know, like you hear, there's still a huge wage gap. You know, women, depending on where you live, on average earn 75% of what men do in similar positions. And, you know, there is that whole, like we were talking about earlier, getting catcalled or just general street harassment or a lot of things that women have to deal with. And there is, I think, a persistent attitude in the world of like, or at least in America, of like, this is the job of women, you know, and this is the job of men. And I think those roles are, you know, less defined than they used to be, but there's still that expectation there. You know, I consider myself a feminist, and I want to like put my money where my mouth is on that. You know, like for example, my wife and I have a daughter on the way.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Who's due in August. And our daughter will have my wife's last name instead of mine. That was like kind of the agreement we came to about last names. Like my son has my last name. And we're like, well, if we ever have a daughter, then she'll have your last name. I guess like I thought that was weird at first, but the more I think about it, the more I like it, the more I'm excited about that idea. And also the trade-off is I get to pick her middle name, which I'm pretty excited about. And that's going to be awesome.
Jeff Oddie, thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Jeff Oddie writes the Family Man column for the magazine FYI Southwest Michigan. A link to his most recent column, I've Been Mom Descended, can be found at WMUK.org. You can find links with more information as well as archived programs of West Southwest at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.